The Raven has become a local celebrity in South Beach, an icon. When we're not on the run and just walking around the city, people recognize him wherever we go. They understand that what he's done here is truly special, and the community has found a way to show their appreciation.
People that grew up here in South Beach, a very, very close-knit type of family. South Beach is only 8 miles long.
As I first started running them, the last thought in my mind was what it means to the community. It was just a friendly presence that drew me back. But since then, almost 19 years I've been running with him, he has assumed a certain status in the community. The community recognize him and his accomplishment. There's a Raven Day on Miami Beach. He's been presented the key to the city, served on as an unelected but appointed member of the city commission. He's sought after for his opinion on what he observes happening on the beach, the good and the bad.
I got to say, I've known him for a long time, and I've enjoyed watching him rise to the occasion and to become something really bigger than just running itself. He's really a Miami Beach icon. In the 70s, nobody ran. That wasn't a thing. I mean, yeah, it was becoming a thing, but now there are thousands and thousands of people running. You know, hundreds of thousands, millions running all around the world. So it's just obviously running changed in the 70s, and he changed with it, and he brought it with him. So he really is, again, to me, an icon and a trendsetter.
Not a goody-goody. He knows the seamy side of life. He's not threatening. He's not judgmental. He really crosses all barriers. He can hang out with some tough guys, but he hangs out with nice people too. It's helped the community. I've learned from reading and hearing different things about him that the community does value him.
March 17th, they closed the beach 2020. Never thought they ever could close the beach, but they did.
We had a little thing called COVID where everything was locked down. It was locked down to the point where they closed Miami Beach. They actually put tape across all the entrances. Cops would be out patrolling. Nobody used to go on the beach. They didn't want anyone congregating. They didn't want small groups. They didn't want large groups. They didn't want any groups on the beach.
Just started running on the concrete. I did as much sand as I could. I did the back beach. I did the Loomis Park. Any bit of sand I'd run on. And sometimes I think I was getting as much as maybe 5 miles on sand, and some days three. Back behind the condos between 4th and 3rd, there's a lot of rocks. So I had to really be careful, but it was sand. So I stayed on it. And people are saying, man, you know, that's really going to hurt your back, isn't it? I said, yeah, it's hurting my back. And every day I felt a little bit worse. Meanwhile, I was making it exactly 2 weeks to the day. It was April 1st when the lifeguards says, we just got an email and you are free to go on the beach. Only you. I went right over the wall. As soon as I can get over the wall, I went right for the sand. I did the rest of the run on the sand like I always do alone. Maybe the last tenth of a mile or so, a cop stops me and says, you're not supposed to be on the beach. You know, you can get arrested. And I said, well, I got permissions. You know, lifeguards told me, says, we're higher than the lifeguards. He was like a new guy. You know, we're like above them. It's just, life's too short to waste time arguing, fighting. Just, I like to live in peace, especially now, you know, older. Next day, I went to lifeguard headquarters and I told him, and I says, can I get a copy of that email? And they printed it out. I had it with me, and the word was out. By then, the cops already knew that I had the permission. So they were out there, and they didn't say nothing, or a couple of them waved. And I just put, like, nose to the grindstone, nose to the sand, just did my thing, and was gone. You know, didn't stay out any longer than I had to, and, you know, went home.
So the community, recognizing his streak and what it's meant to so many people that he's drawn in, actually let him run every day on the beach alone. It was, I think, about a three-month period where, and only him.
The respect he's earned on the beach is undeniable. The Raven shows his own gratitude and respect for others on Miami Beach, specifically the lifeguards.
The beach has changed a lot since I've been there, but I mean, he's seen a lot of lifeguards start working, retire, and he knows their kids or grandkids. He's basically part of the lifeguards. If you go to work, you're going to see him run. The tide goes in and out, and you're going to see the Ravens run at his usual time. You know, he's almost like an arm of lifeguard.
In appreciation to the lifeguards of Miami Beach, Ravens started hosting a barbecue the last Friday of March of every year. And he did that for many, many years. He still does it, but it's nowhere near what it was back in the 80s and 90s. You had all the lifeguards, and if a lifeguard retired during that year, he would be the special guest. And that was a great, because you would meet people, you would meet the lifeguards, their families, and then you would meet guys from the 60s, Florida champions, Mr. Florida, Mr. Florida Olympia, and they would come to these parties.
I've gotten a chance to know a lot of the Raven runners, and it wasn't until I started to run with them more that our conversations got much deeper. I began to think of this from Raven's perspective and the unique look that he gets on things, day in, day out, with these runners.
People talk to me about just about everything, you know, from relationships, financial problems, sports, running, injuries. Just about everything comes up on the run, it seems like, one way or another. Their work maybe is in real estate, and you're not really a real estate person, but you listen as a friend. But it's not something I'd ever be wanting to talk about. There's a lot of psychiatric work, though. Some people just need an ear to listen. You know, I'll tell my troubles too, but I don't like to dwell on my own stuff, because, you know, I can go on too, and I don't want to be one of these long talkers and short listeners, you know. So I like to listen to people and be positive. Say, yeah, you're losing weight. You're looking better all the time, and that little boost gets them going. Or you're getting really good shape. I mean, you're gonna have no problem finding somebody, whether, you know, male or female. We're like psychiatrists. I feel like I am sometimes, without a degree. Well, it's a degree in life by being out there and being social and listening to people.
One of the other runners, he was going through a bad time in his life, and he said, you know, some people find Jesus. He said, I found Raven. You know, so it's very inspiring, and the amount of, I don't know how much burden this is on Raven's shoulders. I hope it isn't, but, you know, a lot of people do confide in him and talk to him about their problems and everything, and he seems to help everybody, and I've never seen him get angry or, you know, shout. I'm like, I don't know how he does it, and I hope some of that has rubbed off on me. So, yeah, very good influence for me, for sure.
Without naming names, I've seen countless people who Raven has, in one way or another, inspired and caused that individual to get back on track in life. And there's been some quite remarkable stories where Raven has been so influential in getting people back on track.
He, like so many in South Beach, there's so many characters in South Beach, and he's one that has not only impacted the community he lives in, but with so many visitors from around the world. He's got so many countries represented in the many that have gone as far as to earn the nickname, which is to say have run the full 8 miles with him. For so many of us, we associate that section of that part of the world with him. He's like having the Eiffel Tower, or like having, I mean, yeah, that sounds grandiose and everything, but when you think of Paris, you think of the Eiffel Tower. And when I think of South Beach and that section of South Beach, once I get towards Ocean Drive, you don't have to see Raven or go out there and run with him to know he's definitely there, just like the Eiffel Tower is there right now. You know, he's definitely there on the beach this afternoon, just like yesterday and just like he will be tomorrow. That kind of consistency is, it's a part of the character of the community. When I told some friends of my family that I've known since childhood that I run with this guy that runs every day. Now, they have a condo up on 43rd Street, I think it is. And they're like, yeah, we know that guy. they're not runners. Yeah, we know that guy. Long hair and the beard, right? Yep, that's him.
There's no denying the impact Raven's had on so many. It's pretty powerful that the mere events of your life can shape others around you. How a stolen song led to all of this. In Running with Raven, it was great to finish the 8 miles and get a name, but I really couldn't stop there. I had to keep running. I've even gone as far as to start my own running streak. And when I tell others and they ask me why, well, it leads back to the story of Robert Ravencraft. Maybe this causes a trickle effect in hopes that they too will find inspiration and motivation just to get out there and not stop.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Raven's consistent running continued, and with this, he was able to feel better about himself and be inspired to write more songs. He became determined to stay on track, and finally decided to take things to another level.
Should we go to January 1st, 1975? I can tell you exactly what kind of day it was. It was sunny, bright, and crisp and cold. And I'm running with Bulldog that day. And I had told him, I'm going to try to run 8 miles a day, every day of the year. For 1975, not take a day off. So he looked at me and said, yeah, Johnny, you're not going to be able to do that. And I said, I'm going to try. You know, I'm pretty stubborn. And I think he did about maybe 3 miles with me, and I just kept going for that eight. I came back the next day and did it again.
Call it being stubborn or his new obsession. But once the Raven sets his mind on something, there isn't much that he'll let get in his way. And he was going to find out that there was a lot ahead that would try to stop him.
The 5th of January, my grandma died. And on January 15th, I got food poisoning for the first time, real bad, with some exotic dancer from Canada. Shin splints came. I stepped on a nail. Pneumonia. It wasn't easy, but I did it. So already I was having challenges. The lifeguard said to me, he says, you're just not quitting, are you? I said, no. And I had pneumonia on December, sneezing, wheezing, coughing, hacking. I'm not quitting. And that was the first year.
So this is where it all started. Overcoming all the obstacles, he made it. 8 miles every day in 1975. It was hard to comprehend just how far he had run in the first year. 2,920 miles. Miami to Los Angeles is 2,749. That is 171 miles farther than the distance between his house and his father's in Los Angeles. I had so many questions on all the particulars surrounding the run. Like, how did he pick his routes? Who was the first to officially run the full eight with him? Or what kind of shoes did he wear?
Sneakers? I tried barefoot. Yeah. Bulldog gave me a pair of boxing shoes. I ran in combat boots that I used to work in the old age home with. The cheap sneakers didn't work. The boots were heavy, but it was a degree of difficulty with the heavy shoes. I tried like just plain socks. By running every day, at the end of the day, there was no skin on my toes. So it was pretty painful. I used to buy Band-Aids, 100 a box, you know, like 10 boxes at a time. And they used to look at me and where I got the Band-Aids, like in the drugstore. Like, man, and I come in there often for these Band-Aids, like every couple of weeks. They didn't say anything, but they just looked at me kind of weird, like, you know, why is this guy buying so many Band-Aids? They're for each toe. You know, sometimes even with putting them on each toe, the sand would get in there and grind in there, and there'd be no skin left. The skin would be raw. Who would have thought? And then the astrologer said to me in 77, they got shoes made just for running, called Nike. And I got a pair. My feet weren't so bad then. And then New Balance were wide. I had always had wide feet. That's kind of been my shoe since.
From Nike to New Balance, with the New Balance 1080s being the official shoes he wears still today. As he tells me this, I look down at his shoes and I can't help but notice. This pair looks like it's nearing retirement. The lace is in pretty good shape, but the sides look worn down, and you can tell they've seen a lot of miles. He then proceeds to tell me that he gets about 2,000 to 3,000 miles on the sand with them.
the routes, I started the thing with the 2 days close by and 1 day long. Like yesterday was at 35th Street. Today and tomorrow are going to be close, and then I go to 47. So I heard that from a fireman. Yeah, a fireman says we have a schedule where we do 1 day on and then 2 days off, like 24 on, 48 off. And I said, just something clicked. Says, why not run 1 day north and then the next 2 days back and forth? When you turn at Espanola Way or Lincoln Road, you get a breeze. It's always from the south in the summertime. So as hot and as bad as it might feel for the heat, you get that breeze. And this back and forth really is a savior. You got the restrooms or people want water. But when you go to 47th, you turn at the pier in the summer, and it's like you just went into an oven. There's just no break. The sun's behind you, and you're just sweating for 4 straight miles all the way up until you make the turn. You get the breeze, and the rest is basically a breeze, almost.
Raven is officially running every day, focused on fighting through the pain, and he doesn't forget about his passion for songwriting. He gets his friends to help record with him.
In 75, I did record a little bit with Coyote, and I think Astrologer and this girl Josephine sang back up on a little homemade recording we did. I wrote a song. I woke up. I was living with the Astrologer then, on and off, and I woke up and there was a guy living in her building. It was like a Cuban version of Nixon, and I had a dream. He took her away. She hated him. He hated her. But I had this dream, and I wrote a song called "I May Be Leaving, But It Sure Ain't Gone." That was it. I may be leaving, but I sure ain't. Yeah, that was it. Had a nice melody. And then they did the harmonies with me.
Running alone was always his way, until his friend Coyote decided to run with him. It would slowly grow into something, which I believe would help to continue to motivate the Raven.
I just kept running every day. I wasn't even thinking about it. Coyote did the first run. You know, he wrote songs, he played harmonica, he played guitar, and he was an athletic guy, and he says, I'm gonna do the 8 miles. He had to go near the shoreline, though. He didn't do the whole thing on the soft sand, because everything was soft sand, so he had to go near the shoreline a little bit. So I was strict. I didn't give him soft sand on that.
The soft sand, for reference, is probably the hardest spot to really run on the beach. And it's where Raven started. This is the area above the shoreline and equal the lifeguard stands. So just imagine running lifeguard stand to lifeguard stand. This is the soft sand.
Yeah, he hung in good. And I remember I came home and told the Astrologer that Coyote did the run. She says, you know, you ought to keep a list. Boy, did that start something.
Raven's list has officially started. Fueled by his love for baseball and statistics, he breaks down the who, what, when for each of the runners, which is now at 95 pages. This is where it started.
Got my second runner, Phoenix. He says, you're the Raven and I'm the Phoenix. I'm coming up from the ashes. Military guy. A little younger than I was. I guess the second time he ran, Bulldog was there. Bulldog says, with his accent, he goes, he's been sipping all night. He could smell the alcohol coming out of him. So I knew the guy. He drank and he ran, but he was kind of a good guy. Then he disappeared. Yule, he was the third runner. And it was a bagel shop right across the street from the bus stop. They were baking bagels. The guy shoveling the bagels in the oven. I thought he was a middle-aged guy. He had no hair. Little stocky guy, I'd say. Strong. Everybody knew Yule. Yeah, because he played pool. He was like a tough guy. Yeah, I'd see him sometimes all decked out like a little, he had like a gangster look. He got so strong because he was the guy shoveling the bagels in. He started coming out to the beach, and Yule had his, he was an arm wrestler. His power was arm wrestling. Yule was only like 5'6" maybe, but he'd see a big guy and go, I could take this guy, But he'd beat the biggest motorcycle, Hell's Angel guys. He'd do it on garbage cans or whatever in bars. That was his big thing. And he would get these challenges on the beach. Like he he'd get a rock and you throw the rock in a garbage can. He'd have you run with the rock and then he'd go in the ocean. He'd make up these little challenges for people. He got me doing a few little things. I didn't want to hurt myself because I had to run every day. He would lose weight and gain weight every year. He'd go from like 129 because he was small. Then he'd go over to 220, then back. He'd fluctuate. So one year he decides he comes out in a rubber suit. He wants to lose weight that year. And that's the only run he ever did in a rubber suit. And Yul and I stayed friends until he died 2 years ago. He was 71.
I can see how what started as a few runners would grow in time. I was curious if you ever branched out to other forms of running, like races or marathons. I know in current day, he's against the idea of ever having to pay to run. But was it always like that?
The first and only race that I did, it was called the Race of the Americas, and it was 8 miles. How can I not do that? And somebody offered to pay my way in. I never paid to run. This guy paid my entry, and I started training. Running 8 miles on the beach in the daytime, and at night, I'd be running 8 miles at night. I go all the way up to Pine Tree Drive and 63rd Street and come around. And there's a few days I did 16. And I remember, I remember training for that. Going up Pine Tree Drive, and there's this guy named Joe the Mailman. He might still be alive. He was 55 then. So 55, and that's 43 years ago. So he passes me. He wore a little bikini. He passes me in the middle of the night on Pine Tree Drive and laughs at me. You know, I said, oh man, that guy can't pass me. And Bulldog would always say, as much as that guy's running, he never gets better. He never improves his body. When the race came, you know, I never did a race, but I remember when it started, I'm watching these people get ahead of me. You know, and they're all, a lot of them, they take off fast. And I just kind of watched and, you know, and I was trained for it. I started building up and, you know, I started getting faster with each mile. The 7th mile, I got Joe the Mailman and laughed at him. I got him back. And that was the fastest 8 miles I ever did, because I don't think I ever did 8 miles on the cement again. So 55:50, I believe it was. And it was like 150 of a close to 1,000, you know. But I was 28 years old. When I played baseball, I always wanted to win, be competitive, be the best. And I didn't come in number one. So I said, well, maybe if I just run every day, maybe I'll be number one someday. Who knows?
The abuse he's put on his body in the early years was clearly visible. I can see the marks and scars on his legs as he's telling me the story. But the injuries didn't really slow him down. He never did race again. But if there was a first place for running through your injuries, I think Raven would take it.
I jumped off the wall at the Decoplage, 100 Lincoln Road, and hit wrong. This whole calf, ligaments and tendons were all torn up. And if you look at my leg, it's still swollen, and the varicose vein is sticking out. I was dragging my leg for about 3 months, from May till August of 79. And I remember the astrologer was giving me psychic healing. She was going like this over my leg, putting her arms, her hands, and going into a trance. She got me some of the SMO they put on horses. It was hurting for weeks, but I kept going. And of course, that throws your whole stride off. My knee was hurting, my hip was hurting. Yeah, I went right in. I heard it go like that. I could feel it, and I could hear the crunch, that swishing sound. Many a day, I thought, especially in the beginning. Once it started like improving a little, you know, after maybe 2 months, 60 days, I started feeling, I think I'm going to beat this. But the first, I'd say 60 days, I was torture.
I winced just thinking about running through pain like that. It seemed like he was hit from all sides, as if fate was daring him to keep running. Just looking at the marks on his legs, I could see so many stories in each and every pain he has experienced.
57 times I've been stung, but only twice real bad. And the first time was January 5th, 80. I'm finishing the swim. There's the rope line at 6th Street where we finish. And I decide, I'm feeling pretty good. I'll take another 10 strokes or something. And damn, I got whacked. It's on me, but I don't know to take the tentacles off me. So they're on me, and the more they're on you, the more poison is getting inside your body. I must have grabbed my clothes, got to the street, like, it hurt, it burned, I could hardly breathe. That was the worst I ever had. Another time in April of 80-something, I had it all over me. My neck, my chest, my legs, my back, my feet, my fingers, you know, you name it, covered. And I went home and there was this like little blue line stuck and I didn't know to get them off. And I went in the shower, hot shower, and I felt better. So when I went to the beach the next day to run, the lifeguard, the gunny, we called him the gunny, he was a Marine drill instructor, great guy. He looks at me and says, you know, I've been out here for about 15 years. That's the worst man of worst thing I've ever seen. Says it must have really hurt. I said, it really did, yeah.
Despite getting the worst stings in apparently 15 years, he still continued running. And it's almost like no matter what gets in his way, he just runs through it. While he was motivated, it was not always easy. But even in the hardest times, he somehow found a way to continue on.
So I was running under the pier every day, and you know, it seemed like the tide and the water and the sand kept getting closer and closer in. So I say to myself, I'm going to go a little further in to get my shoes don't get soaked. And as I did that, someone stood up and I turned a little further to avoid it and wasn't looking. Bang! Right in the piling, covered in blood. You know, my glasses, I can't see. I just covered in blood. Touch my head, it's real soft. I said, oh shit, this has got to be bad. The first person I see when I come out is this guy. His name is Lloyd Long, paramedic. Good friend of mine. We worked out together. We did pull-ups. We ran. And he looks at me. He says, look, you're going to have to go to the hospital. You're going to have to get stitches. You're not going to die. Basically, you'll be all right, you know, in time. It's busy Sunday afternoon. Lifeguards, the guy lies me down and he's cleaning my fingers, cleaning my glasses, a guy named the Gator. And they get this guy, Donnie Schubert, to take me to the hospital. An old friend, he was a lifeguard and he's the same age as me. And he's speeding over the causeway, top speed, not because he wants to get me to the hospital quicker, because he's all upset about his girlfriend getting pregnant. You know, he's pissed off about that. I said, Donnie, take it easy. The more he was talking, the more angry he got, not even asking me how I feel. So they get me in a room, they put me the painkillers, they stitch me up, you know, and they tell me I have a concussion, you gotta stay here for a few days. I said, no, get me out of here. The lifeguards will get me back to the beach. And I look down the hall, there comes Donnie and another lifeguard called the Stud. I said, they'll get me back, I'm all right. I got out of there, and they bring me back to Christine, the astrologer. She knew what happened. She was on the beach. They all told her. They dropped me at her place. I dropped my clothes at her door, and I said, I got to finish the run. And she says, oh, how are you going to do that? So I'm just going to, you know, run. And she runs out following me with a flashlight. So every time I went back and forth, I had about 5 more miles to go. She couldn't run with me, but she was shining the light. And after all that, I went swimming. It was August 1st, it was hot. Of course, they told me not to go swimming, so a couple of the stitches popped. And after all that, I went to work that night, security.
There's something really special about hearing him recall this night, having a partner like the astrologer to help him. Crazy sometimes how we take for granted the people in our lives and the roles that they play.
She was 21 years older than me, but she, you know, she brought me into a different world, and I brought her into a different world, because she didn't follow country music or anything, and I kind of turned her on to Elvis. And she thought Elvis could have been an opera singer. She loved Elvis, loved Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, because of me. Didn't like Hank Williams Jr., but we went to his concert once, and she wrecked her car. She always thought he was kind of arrogant, but very talented. I didn't think so. She did, in case Hank's listening. Well, she'd always make a big deal over Christmas. Christmas was a big deal for her. But she would celebrate Christmas all, I mean, she'd have the tree up until July sometimes, the Christmas tree. And I remember at one time, manager of her building says, you know, Miss Whiting, she's playing Jingle Bells in the middle of July. I said, I know, she loves Christmas. She always made the holidays special, and I kind of miss it. That was something. And the only time she'd ever cook was Thanksgiving or Christmas, make a big duck.
While the Raven was finding stability in a relationship, things would drastically change on South Beach.
More lifeguards started joining me for just, like, they could only do from their lifeguard stand and back, or sometimes they'd go a little further. One guy used to sneak out for 3 miles. He'd go from the pier, from his stand, like 8th Street, to the pier and back, to 14th, and now he'd be gone for like half an hour or 40 minutes. So, but he wasn't supposed to leave it. He could never leave a tower half, 40 minutes now. But this guy did. It was just nothing going on. This is kind of like before the Mariels came and old people, the dredging, the beach was empty.
90 miles south, off the coast of Florida, Fidel Castro would make a decision that would change South Beach forever and change the course of history.
Good evening. Politicians from several states tonight are sharply criticizing President Carter's handling of the Cuban refugee problem. Today, the Cuban sea lift slowed a bit, but since last month, 25,000 refugees from Castro's Cuba have come to America. Between midnight and noon today, 23 boats filled with over 800 Cubans reached Key West, Florida. U.S. Marines are now on duty at Key West to keep order among the restless refugees waiting resettlement in the United States.
Well, at first, it was confusion. That's the word. And then we saw what we were getting.
Castro's criminals. Only a small percentage of those who came on the Mariel boat lift were either hardened criminals, mental patients, or communist agitators, but they have left their mark.
The old people, they started getting really scared. And I remember one old lady says, on that condo right behind the lifeguard stand on Fifth Street, I would take 20,000 to get out of here. And there, of course, it was worth, even then it was worth 100 plus. And most of them left. Allendale, the ones that stayed, they died off, but most of them just left, fearing for their life. And I was naive, I was young, I had nowhere to go, and my friends like Bruno would say, if you stay down there, you're going to die. And I said, I got nowhere to go and can only get better. And it did. It took a while. It took about 4 years, 5 years. It got a little better. I'd see these guys stealing things, and the lifeguard would go after a guy and throw me the radio, and I'd call it in. Or I'd go after the guy, and they'd call it in. And then lifeguards and I would tell each other, look out for this guy. I said, look out for that guy. The dredging is definitely in full force. There's a picture on my wall here. October 31st, 1981. There's a big pile of sand in front of the 6th Street lifeguard stand. And the title on the picture says, not a wave in sight. Bigfoot and I. He was a rookie lifeguard then. And the beach was basically empty because the Mariel boat lift, the dredging, no girls were coming, no tourists were coming. Beach was just turned upside down, dead. Tell you, it happened real quick. It just, one day it's old people and everything's peaceful and quiet, and next day you got all these scumbags, perverts, drug dealers, killers, thieves, mental cases, all in South Beach. Most people left. I stuck it out. My friends would say to me, if you hang around, you're going to get killed. If you stay there, you're going to get killed. And I said, I got nowhere to go.
It was definitely a unique time on South Beach. And around this time, things were changing drastically. But not for the Raven. The Raven stayed consistent with his goal to keep running 8 miles every day.
I was always leaving someone behind, traveling 100,000 miles, 8 miles at a time, searching for the truth, heard some lies along the way, found light in the darkness, running 8 miles a day, seen every single sunset, blazing heat, pouring rain, blinded by the lightning, 8 miles a hurricane. They said, run, Raven, run, what are you running from? You've been running so long, and you're only 8 miles gone. I was never one to follow the pack. Just know where to turn down the 8 mile track. I'm training for tomorrow. That's the way it is for me. There's no price to pay. 8 miles running free. Never been in rush hour. I had another plan. Outside of the norm, doing 8 miles in the sand. They said, run, Raven, run. What are you running from? You've been running so long, and you're only 8 miles gone. Running when I'm feeling bad. Running when I'm tired. Running when I had no work. Running when I was fired. Running when my heart was broke. Running when I was lame. Running when I had no hope. Running when in pain. Running when I was weak. Running when I was strong. Running when I needed sleep. Running 8 miles gone. I'm not the fastest. Fastest doesn't always win. To come back tomorrow and do 8 miles again. Finding my answers, running like a fugitive. Taming my anger, 8 miles to forgive. Before Forrest Gump, simple is simple me. Let me be your inspiration and do 8 miles with me. They said, run, Raven, run. What are you running from? You've been running so long, and you're only 8 miles gone. They said, run, Raven, run. What are you running from? You've been running so long, and you're only 8 miles gone.
Raven is a production of Imperative Entertainment and Life Is My Movie Entertainment. Hosted by me, Vincent Vittorio. Executive produced by Jason Hoke, Claudio Zungri, Vincent Vittorio, and Laura Caulfield. Original music, Louis Harrell. Original songs, Robert Raven Kraft. Audio mixing, Rosario Onion Suarez and Craig Sheffield. Story editors, Vincent Vittorio, Eric Ricks, Teen Au, Carolyn Harvey, Jessica Vittorio, and Jeremy Marr. Original photography, Mary Beth Kaith. Cinematography and editing, Ashton McCammon and Marley Mullis. A very special thanks to Raven and the entire running community. If you want to run with Raven, you can find him every day on Miami Beach's 5th Street Lifeguard Stand. 5:30 daylight savings time and 4:30 regular time. In addition to the podcast, we created some bonus video content. Find it on our YouTube channel at Life Is My Movie. If you like this show, please tell your friends and leave us a review. Thank you so much for listening.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll.
Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you were only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.